Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We look at the issue of voting machine security again and hear from Evan Davis, who's been investigating the Ohio elections, and Bill Bunnell of TrueVote Connecticut.
What they told me was that if a machine failed, they would take the memory card out of that machine. They would put it in another machine and count from where the memory card remembered where it was. Is that your understanding of the protocols?
No.
While Connecticut Secretary of State Susan Bisewitz and her Deputy Secretary of State Leslie Mara have made great progress in opening their doors to voting rights groups, their office nevertheless failed to take the advice of TrueVote Connecticut, who had called for new voting machine protocols to be written for the safe and accurate use of new AccuVote optical scan machines manufactured by Diebold and conveyed to the state by LHS associates. LHS workers were on site to offer what the state thought would be guidance, yet they said they were there to act as machine repair people, opening machines, taking out memory cards, putting half-used memory cards into new machines, or in some cases, providing all new memory cards or all new machines they had hand-carried with them. It was a security nightmare, and not what the computer technology expert hired by the state, Professor Alex Schwartzman of UConn, the University of Connecticut, had in mind. Questions have been raised as to whether or not Connecticut has outsourced too much of the process, and some have criticized the level of access LHS has to the entire electoral process. The type of machine selected for Connecticut creates a paper ballot, something voting rights activists were happy about. But our interviews done during recounts revealed that there was indeed a lack of clear written protocols on the safe handling of the machines during elections. At recounts of the 2nd District race in Bolton, Ashford, and Montville, Connecticut, LHS employees told us they would be swapping out memory cards during the voting and recounting. Now we have found at least one example of a memory card switch in Montville, Connecticut. The state is holding debriefing sessions about the use of the new AccuVote machines. We went to Montville to observe and record and found no evidence that the topic of memory cards had come up prior to our raising questions. We spoke with recount moderator Dick Wilson of Montville, Registrar Lorraine Elliott, and Ted Bromley of the Connecticut Legislation and Elections Administration.
I'm Dori Smith, and I'm with Talk Nation Radio.
Oh, yes.
You were a moderator during the election?
Yes.
Can you just tell me, were you aware of protocols on how to handle the machines in terms of the memory cards?
The memory cards?
That's right.
Well, the memory cards were already in the scanner. That's set up by the Registrar of Voters. We don't do anything with the scanner, with the memory cards at all. We don't touch those.
Now, in case the one of the machines had failed, did you have a protocol for how to deal with those?
If the machine itself failed, we had an extra one in the office. It had been brought up and put in there, yeah, if it failed, yeah.
And now the gentleman from LHS said that he was there with either a backup memory card or he would have taken the memory card out of the one machine and put it in the other. Was that your understanding?
That's correct, yes.
Is that what he told you?
He was available here at Town Hall. If something went wrong, he had an LHS card that he could put in another machine and bring it up and replace the one we had, yes.
Okay, thank you. And your name, sir?
Dick Wilson.
Mr. Wilson, you were the moderator?
Moderator, yeah. Now, when that happened, we had the ballots could have been put into the auxiliary bin of the voting box, the ballot box. And then at the end of the day, we could have brought them out and put them through the scanner. So if that happened, there was a way of handling the paper ballots.
Now, where did you get that protocol for how to do things?
Oh, during the training sessions.
From LHS?
Yeah. Yes.
So LHS told you to do that?
Yes, correct. That's the way it would have been handled. It's the only way it could have been handled.
But did you have written protocols from the Secretary of State?
No, because I think all that is still being formulated. Because everything that we did in this election, these new scans, there's no state statutes covering it as yet, because it was a trial effort. That's why these gentlemen are here now. They're going to be rewriting the election laws to accommodate these new machines.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the Connecticut Legislation and Elections Administration were just a few steps away, and we walked over to speak with them next.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Dori Smith with WHUS in Storrs.
Hi.
You are?
Ted Bromley.
Oh, right. I tried to phone your office earlier today just to ask about the event today and several others, I guess, scheduled this week. This session today was to sort of debrief poll workers and election officials?
That's right.
And tell me, did you happen to discuss the handling of the memory cards on Election Day or during recounts?
No.
That didn't come up?
No.
Now, several of the people that I asked during the recount, as they were doing the recount, the officials, said that they would be relying on the LHS reps who were there to fix any problem if one of the machines had a problem. They would be there to fix it. And they talked about opening the machines up, taking the memory cards out, and putting them in new machines. In some cases, they said they would replace the memory cards, or they had a machine in their trunk. Can you just tell me, did your office look into the protocols, the exact way that those protocols were written for the handling of those machines and the memory cards specifically?
For the recount, we did, yes.
Can I get a copy of the written protocols?
Sure.
Okay, and can you just tell me what they said?
Off the top of my head, I can't.
Because, you know, I did speak with Mr. Schwartzman from UConn under contract to sort of evaluate machine security, and this was the one area where when I spoke with him after being present at the recounts, he said this was one of the vulnerabilities he found, that it was the understanding of LHS technicians that they would be opening machines and swapping out memory cards, and he didn't think this was a good idea. Can you just comment on whether or not that will be one of your considerations as you look at the recounts of the 2nd District in particular and also the overall vote that was cast this election?
Well, we did take into consideration the vulnerability of the memory cards. And the only reason that we would have allowed a memory card to be swapped out is if it was corrupt. And you would have to do that in order to use the machine. Other than that, the machines were needed to be sealed and kept in the same manner as they were at the end of the election.
Now, how do you account for the difference in the understanding that these LHS reps had that I interviewed? Their understanding was that they would be opening machines, they would be taking out the memory card in a machine that failed. They would be putting that memory card into a new machine or one on hand. So their understanding was that they would be handling these memory cards in the event of machine failure, and that was how they saw things.
Well, as I stated, there would be some circumstances in which you would need a machine for a recount depending on what happened during the election. If all the machines were used or if some of the machines failed during the election, you would have to prepare that machine, create it, test it as if it were going to be used in an election environment for the recount.
What they told me was that if a machine failed, they would take the memory card out of that machine. They would put it in another machine and count from where the memory card remembered where it was. Is that your understanding of the protocols?
No.
So they had it wrong?
They could have. I can't comment on that.
The state said they would provide documents on the protocols handed out to officials on Election Day and for the 2nd District recount. I spoke with Registrar Lorraine Elliott, who is so interested in voting machines that she took a repair course on the old lever machines. She plans to take another one to become a machine repair person for the AccuVote optical scan machines to better serve the people of Montville, Connecticut. The registrar's first problem came up when she realized that she had been given fewer machines than promised by the state of Connecticut and so had to turn to an LHS associate's rep for assistance, as in Ashford, Connecticut, and Bolton, Connecticut. Montville's registrar said she had seen no written protocols on who should handle any machines that failed during the official casting of the vote or during recounts.
I haven't seen it in writing. The only thing I was told is you pull the whole machine out and replace it with another machine. Because when I called Hartford, we had a problem with one of our machines, and I called Hartford and they said just replace the machine. They did not say replace the card. That's a big difference.
As we talked about protocols, Registrar Lorraine Elliott of Montville realized that an occasion had come up where they had to turn to LHS when two memory cards actually failed. I asked her to talk about the details.
On the recount, we had two memory cards that failed, and they replaced it with their LHS one. We had set up a new machine, and we put the memory card in, and it didn't work. It didn't print anything out. So we took that one out and we put another one in. And the same thing with the second one. It didn't print. I don't know how the memory card actually works, but the little prongs, I guess sometimes they don't actually touch the inside. So the third memory card that we got from LHS worked fine.
The registrar said she was satisfied with the security provided by running test cards through the machine with the new memory card in it. But voting rights activists remain concerned about the potential opening to hacking and fraud if a malicious insider with LHS or some other agency happened to be on site with that level of access. They would prefer that all machines are set up prior to elections and/or recounts in advance and in a carefully controlled setting. Retired engineer Bill Bunnell is with True Vote Connecticut. He had been in Montville during the recount and had seen an LHS representative take a memory card from his pocket. In that case, they were able to get their original technologies to work. I asked him to listen to what the Montville registrar had said about changing memory cards and then comment.
She seemed to me, just from the clip you played there, that she was interested, probably had tried to learn more about the process, but knew that she still had more to learn. I find that somewhat encouraging, but it pretty well confirms that there were no straightforward procedures that they were following.
Now, what would you suggest that the Secretary of State's office and Connecticut's voting agencies do at this point, Bill Bunnell?
We're seeing enough and had followed enough of what happened in the 25 towns to confirm that it should be viewed as an expedited process that allowed the state to get experience with optical scan systems in 25 towns. And what has to be done here, it would seem to me, is that that experience has to be read and converted into guidance, into regulations, into procedures, and disseminated to some 140-odd towns that are going to have their first experience with all of this, and in some of them in much bigger scale, in 2007. And I think all of us who've been involved in following the evolution of electronic voting here in the state are concerned that the Secretary's office, and there is the, they are the only people available and responsible at the moment, the Secretary of State being designated as the state's chief election official. They're the only people who the towns can turn to. And they are understaffed, they're under facilitated in terms of people with qualifications to handle all of this. And one thing your work is showing us is how heavily they have relied on LHS to do everything for them. And I think that was possibly the expedient solution to get it done this past November. But that very quickly, I think, has to be looked at, and it'll be interesting to see how the Secretary puts together her legislative package this year in terms of what budget and resources she intends to apply to the voting administration activities.
As the Secretary of State's office and other agencies, I know the state's attorney, Michael Kozek, is working on this, Ted Bromley. These are people working in the elections department at the Secretary of State's office. They're going to be actually writing new law. And I just wondered, do you think that there's a possible opening here for, since the Secretary of State's office is open to voting rights activists, is there a possibility for one very large, good public forum where all of these issues can be aired and discussed, even as the laws are being written, so that the public can be hearing from Mr. Schwartzman at UConn, the public can be hearing from the Secretary of State and from her various officials writing these new laws, and we can finally start to do some public education, if the media will cooperate, that is.
Those are all good thoughts. And again, I would look back to the start of the Voting Technology Standards Board, which the legislature did choose to implement two sessions ago and unfortunately was not able to sustain attention during the last session. That brought together the roots of a group that could have helped hold this. Growing out of this, quite frankly, was the connection with Alex Schwartzman at UConn, and that is certainly a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, the Secretary's office, I feel, we're seeing, has leaned too heavily on a group of computer scientists to cover some of these areas, which really have more to do with management and technical management rather than just computer science. And it's that gap that she has chosen to outsource to LHS.
Right, so that we found LHS was involved in the sales and marketing, and certainly in informing the state about the machines, step one. Then, after the machines were chosen, LHS was involved in the training of town officials. They were on site. Then they were involved in the election that was held, the congressional election, midterm 2006. Then they were involved in the recount. And finally, LHS staff were on hand during the audit itself.
Yes, and remember one thing here. The Secretary's statements throughout all of this have been a bit misleading. The contract that the state has is with Diebold, or more specifically with Diebold Election Systems. LHS is an exclusive dealer in Connecticut, in New England, and New York State for Diebold. So the contract had requirements in it which covered much of this area in terms of training responsibilities and support responsibilities, but they had chosen to essentially subcontract that operation to LHS, which is, in principle, is a fine group. It's just that the Secretary of State's office has yet to be able to administer or manage that activity, and that's where I think we have to look for some revision in how Connecticut wants to administer its elections.
Bill Bunnell of True Vote Connecticut, truevotect.org. We spoke with Evan Davis as he was en route to Ohio to observe recounts and other voting operations there. Davis provided us with some shocking reports about the 2004 election in Ohio. He was part of a team that included people like Bob Fitrakis of the Free Press, who made an unsuccessful but educational run for the office of governor of Ohio. You can learn more about their case against the Ohio Secretary of State at freepress.org. Evan, talk about the 2004 election and some of what the procedures were supposed to be versus what they wound up being in terms of the recounts.
Well, in Ohio, there's a mandatory 3% recount requirement, which means that 3% of the ballots in each county that is subject to a recount, or rather in each precinct that is subject to a recount, will be counted by hand. And once that 3% of the ballots are counted by hand, those very same ballots, this is, of course, in the previous election of 2004, where we still had paper ballots, which is no longer the case in most of Ohio, those ballots would be run through the same scanner or tabulator again. And if the tabulator or scanner gives a figure that is identical to the hand count figure, then the rest of the ballots of that precinct or that county are just run through the same tabulator as per normal, and the tabulator's results are accepted as the final tally, and the recount is finished. If there's a discrepancy, however, then the requirement is that after a couple of attempts, that discrepancy persists, even if it's as little as one vote difference, then all of the ballots in the county are to be counted by hand. So the first counting is really just a test of the machine's accuracy. And the rest of it after that, it either affirms the machine's accuracy or you have to count everything by hand. The problem with that, as I spoke with people like Clint Curtis and Avi Rubin and even the officials from Triad, the company that was responsible for running the election counting in about half of Ohio's 88 counties, it seemed to me that it would be possible to program the machines so that they always count the ballots up to some threshold percentage, be it 3% or 5% or 10% accurately, but the machines would then apply an algorithm to the remaining ballots to cause an outcome that favors one particular candidate over another, or one outcome in an issue race over another, and that, according to Clint Curtis, it's possible to program the machines with such an algorithm in such a way so that once the ballots are run through, that algorithm is self-erasing and untraceable. Other professors such as Avi Rubin and David Dill have confirmed that that is possible. And we've seen with the Diebold machines that they're imminently hackable and easily hackable, and hackable in such a way so that those kinds of instructions can be fed to them and then are self-erasing and untraceable.
Evan, when you say that the machines can be hacked, we're talking about an AccuVote machine. It's an optical scan machine. People fill in the bubbles, and then the machine accepts the ballot, the paper ballot, and the paper ballot is stored. Are we talking about something similar, or are you talking about touchscreen machines only?
I think that there has not been a generation of electronic voting machines created yet that has been impervious to hacking, and some of the top computer scientists in the country have opined that you can never create an electronic voting system that is 100% tamper-proof or error-proof, and that, therefore, the mere existence of these electronic voting machines is in itself a violation of the expectation of election security. If those machines are known to have certain failure rates, as we have seen across the country with the Diebold machines. Even in Ohio, those counties that are using Diebold machines had those machines tested by an independent agency that was contracted by the Secretary of State prior to their implementation in the various counties. And the people who worked on those inspection teams under the instructions of this independent agency, which was not Diebold and not related to any of the manufacturers, found that the average failure rate of these Diebold machines was around 10% in every county they investigated. And this report is a public document. It was made available to the Secretary of State, and yet he certified those machines anyway. That, to me, means that we are accepting a level of inaccuracy and or insecurity in these machines that, in many cases, exceeds the margin by which the vote tallies, as reported, differ from one candidate to another or on the issues.
Now, Evan Davis, in the sense that, you know, we'll just go over Ohio 2004, was there a recount of paper ballots at that time? Was that election, you know, by regulation or by protocol in terms of what you were saying about this percentage margin?
Well, in 2004, you had various technologies in the various counties. About half of Ohio's counties were paper ballot systems. Some of them were optical scans and some were punch cards. And then you had some counties like Franklin County that was using an older version of the touchscreen voting machines. And in the case of the touchscreen voting machines, the recount consisted of simply running the same memory cards through the same scanners that read them initially. So naturally, those results are always going to come out exactly the way they did before. And they did. So that's not really a recount at all. Then in the paper punch card ballot counties, those were run by the Triad Corporation out of Xenia, Ohio, and Triad committing a number of violations of election law and election procedures by physically handling the paper punch card ballots in the process of instructing poll workers how to run them through. Triad printed cards that are supposed to delineate the beginning and the end of particular precincts, and yet those cards were pre-printed and reused, and in some cases ended up being counted as ballots themselves. Sometimes they fell out of the stacks and wound up elsewhere. Chads were falling out of the cards every time they were handled, etc. So there's a real degradation of the information that those ballots are supposed to contain, as well as numerous violations of the chain of custody. So those recounts would have to be considered invalid. Then in the optical scan counties, we found a number of other problems. These have been detailed, by the way, by Bob Petrakis, and I helped him and Richard Hayes Phillips do some of the investigation there. In Miami County, we had a problem with the number of ballots being greater than the number of signatures in the poll books, and yet even despite a hand count of the number of ballots that are there, including how those ballots were filled out, the results after numerous scans came out different just about every time. So in Miami County, the director of the Board of Elections handed us a piece of paper that he called the freely amended election tallies, and they reflected a huge shift in every precinct in that county from the initially reported vote tally. And yet, in the precincts that we examined, which are about a third of the precincts in that county, a physical examination, which, by the way, we photographed and videotaped, of those ballots, even differed from the freely amended results. So it seemed as though they were simply incapable there of counting the ballots on hand, let alone explaining how so many more ballots ended up in the stacks than there were signatures in the voter rolls. Then in Claremont County, where they have an optical stand system as well, just as you described for Connecticut, where voters pencil in the little spots on the ballot for the candidates and issues they want, we found ballots there that had pencil marks covered over with little white stickers. This was done by the election board, the election officials there, and then additional pencil marks for opposing candidates filled in after the fact. And it sure looked like they were filled in with different pencils than the voters had used. Then also there, too, was degradation in the information, as ballots that were unreadable, allegedly, by the scanning machines initially, had been remade by the election board workers. That is, they took the original ballot and copied over the information onto a fresh ballot to reflect the original intention of the voter, and then that newly copied ballot would be readable by the scanner. And yet, the original ballots that they said were unreadable were destroyed, were disposed of. So there's no original evidence of the intention of the voter other than the poll workers say so. And that is just flatly illegal. But it all results from the Secretary of State not having given clear instructions to the election boards, and so every election board went about it differently. In some cases, there may have been very deliberate malfeasance, deliberate fraud as opposed to incidental or accidental fraud, but of course, fraud is fraud when it comes to the results.
And where finally the lack of protocols is concerned, you mentioned that that was a serious problem in Ohio. Do you think that there are protocols in place in Ohio now that have corrected some of these problems you saw in 2004?
Well, we'll see. The majority of Ohio has now gone to electronic voting machines of one sort or another. And they're coming from various vendors, so there isn't one uniform system across the whole state. The only thing that is becoming uniform across the state is the voter registration database, which is apparently being subtracted to Diebold, and that in itself poses some problems, because one of the problems leading into the 2006 midterm elections is that a number of voters found themselves purged from the voter rolls for various reasons and therefore had to vote provisionally, and there's no guarantee that the provisional ballots will be counted. And as we've seen, the provisional ballots in the 15th district in Ohio won't be counted until after the Ohio State-Michigan football game, which, as we know, takes precedence over the nation's future. That's Mary Jo Kilroy versus Deborah Price.
A cautionary tale for sure from Evan Davis, who reports for Pacifica. He's in Ohio monitoring recounts there, which began December 5th. You can read more about what went wrong in the 2004 and 2006 election at freepress.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS, Radio for the People at the University of Connecticut. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion. We'll be right back.